The season 2 premiere of Succession, The Summer Palace, is over, but we are just getting started stuffing raccoons in your chimney here on Post Show Recap. Yeah. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler. I'm here with Emily Fox. Emily, what is that smell?
That's disgusting.
What's the smell? I mean, Emily and I are having HVAC issues right now in our apartment. Could it be that somebody stuffed a raccoon in the system?
I don't think so.
It's a frozen raccoon instead of a charred raccoon.
Yeah. Do you want to tell the story about the mouse that got into your sweatshirt that time?
I don't, because that's wildly off track. I had a mouse in my sweatshirt one time. It was dead and it smelled.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Succession, because nobody is here for that. Succession has returned, Emily Fox.
It has. I'm so excited about it.
I'm so excited. There's so much to talk about. There's literally too much to talk about that we will not be able to talk about every single thing that happened in this episode. It's a very dense show, and that's one of the reasons why it's fantastic. To catch you up in case you missed it, Succession, it's back. We are podcasting about it for the first time ever here on Post Show Recaps this season. Emily and I already recorded a preview podcast about everything to expect from season 2. It was basically a table setter from everything from season 1. So if you had not seen Succession before, hopefully it set the deck for you so that you could tune into Succession season 2. But more hopefully, it inspired you to go and binge watch season 1 of Succession so you are on board for season 2. If it did not inspire you, but now you are alerted to it and now you kind of want to go back and do it, plenty of time, just one episode of Succession season 2 so far. Go back and watch the first season. It's magnificent. And I think, Emily, you would agree with me, after just one episode of season 2, they have not missed a beat.
No, definitely not. I think we're only a few days different from how season 1 ended to season 2 starting.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally 48 hours of story time has passed between the end of season 1 and the start of season 2, even if it's been about a year or so since season 1 ended. So that's a really, really exciting development. We'll talk about all of that. Just some business. Emily and I are recapping this every single week. We are usually going to be recording these podcasts on Monday mornings. I believe next week we will have to record on Tuesday morning, so that podcast will be coming a little bit later than expected. But Mondays, late morning, early afternoon, typically where we are recording, we want your feedback. We want your questions, your comments. We've got a little bit this week. Great stuff, just not quite the volume that we're hoping for. So please send it our way. We want to hear from you. Tweet at us at Post Show Recaps is our Twitter account for Post Show Recaps. I am at Round Howard. Emily is at Emilet. We would love it if you would subscribe to Post Show Recap so you do not miss an episode of the Succession podcast. Subscribe on your podcast app of choice. Leave your ratings and reviews if you would be so kind. Emily, there's so much to talk about. I want to get into it. I want to quickly stop down and thank our sponsors for this episode before we move any further. This episode of Post Show Recaps is brought to you by Progressive. Saving money on your car insurance is easy with Progressive. It's an average savings of $699 a year for customers who switch and save. In fact, customers can qualify for an average of 6 discounts on their auto policy when they switch to Progressive. Discounts just for starting a quote online or owning multiple vehicles. Get your quote online at progressive.com and see how much you could be saving. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Okay, Emily.
Yes.
Oh my God. Succession. It's back. The Summer Palace is the name of the season 2 premiere and the setting for much of it.
Except it's not the summer.
No, but I mean, I guess that's just like where they hang, or is that like the name? I mean, there's the great Summer Hall of Westeros in Game of Thrones. Could there be Summer Palace is the equivalent here? It seems to be. The Summer Hall was the Targaryen retreat, Emily Fox, when the Targaryens would go on vacay.
Cool.
You don't really care. You're not a Game of Thrones person. Few people are anymore, to be quite honest.
I'd like to think I dodged a bullet in some ways on that one.
A Valyrian tipped bullet indeed. To give the quick overview of just what this episode was about, sort of the big bullet points would be that really only very, very little amount of time has passed since the end of season 1. It's 48 hours later. That's expressed to us really early on in the episode. Understandably then, Kendall Roy is a zombie still. He is still shell-shocked from what happened at the end of season 1 when he was involved in the accident that left a man dead. We come to find out in this episode that maybe that man didn't have to die. Very upsetting news on that front. But Kendall is sucked back in. He's in rehab at the start of the season, or at least in some sort of retreat. His father had told him to go dry out in the desert. Looks like he's trying to do that, but it takes no time at all before he's sucked right back in, because Logan is battling the bear hug and he needs his number one boy to come in and help him out.
Or Mr. Potato Head, as he lovingly refers to him.
There's
in
a
this
lot.
Episode.
Oh my God. There's and if that's lovingly for Logan Roy, I think that tells you quite.
I don't know. A lot can happen in 48 hours. So
a lot can happen in 48 hours. A lot can change when you leave camp, even for only an hour.
Yeah.
Logan Roy is going to decide that if he's going to fight the bear hug that Sandy and Stewie are trying to enforce upon Waystar Roy, quote. I've said that very strangely.
Waystar Roy, quote.
Yeah, I'm not going to go back and change that. We're just going to keep moving. That if he's going to do that, then he needs to name a successor. That's like a big, flashy, sexy thing that's going to get the investors all feeling comfortable and like we're going to be all right here. And much of the meat of this episode is focused on who is that going to be. We come to find out that it's going to be Shiv, or at least that's the deal that is laid out behind closed doors. It's a top secret deal for now. Shiv is going to be the successor. That is very exciting. But this episode establishes the main conflict being, will Logan just give in or will he fight back? It appears that despite all advice from like everybody with a brain, he's going to fight back. And of course, he's going to fight back because otherwise, what would the show be?
Right.
Thoughts on the episode just overall before we dig into all of those specifics, Emily. I was so happy to have Succession back.
I was too. I mean, I think we're seeing Logan firing on all cylinders again, which is an interesting take given the fact that he was weakened significantly by his random illness at the beginning of season one. So he seems to have recovered for the most part and, you know, he's being a lot more like his old self from what we understand that to be. Shiv has a significant glow up. Her haircut is everything. Very excited about how she's looking.
I think it says a lot about me that I guess I just didn't really notice in the first place that Shiv didn't have hair that was worth mentioning. I always just thought Shiv was a queen.
I mean, she looked great in season one, but she's a lot more polished and, you know, sort of CEO-ish in season two. If
she's ready for
sense.
The job.
Yeah. She's got the look.
She got the power cut while she was on her honeymoon. She could sense a disturbance in the forest and she knew that she needed to get this done.
And she was just itching to get out of that honeymoon, by the way.
It was very funny. It's like, should we leave? I don't want to leave. Do you want to leave? No, I don't want to leave. Okay. But do you want to leave?
Yeah.
You know, that was just the whole thing was really, really funny back and forth.
I loved a little snippet of cousin Greg, just ensuring that he's still in the mix.
There's a tiny bit of Greg the Egg in this episode. We'll get to him. But overall, just as like kind of a plot engine, the fact that we're actually talking about from Logan's perspective, I'm going to need to name a successor. So like we're getting like the name of the show back into the premise in this very overt way where even Logan Roy is acknowledging the inevitable that he will not be here forever. There are only so many city buses he can destroy.
You loved that line.
before he's taken down. Emily, I loved the whole episode. We watched it when it came on and we were both just like so happy by the ending and we started like getting into our phones and reading recaps and articles and stuff. And in the background, the episode on HBO
had an encore presentation
that I think like unchecked, we just kept on for like the next 40 minutes or so before we decided to go to sleep. And that's a mark of a great episode.
I finally started laughing and was like, okay, we don't really need to rewatch all of this, but it was pretty delightful in the background.
We watched, I mean, typically like I want to try and before we get onto a recap, I want to, if time isn't like a huge factor, I'd love to watch an episode twice. Certainly with like Game of Thrones, I would watch it like four times before I got on a Posha Recaps microphone at the very least. But here I figured like we would watch it at night. Then the next morning we would watch it again, before we got on the horn. And instead, like we just immediately started watching it again. Like I could have watched it a third time in a row.
Probably, right?
It was from the jump, immediately, it was so captivating and so compelling. And there's just, I don't know, the level of acting, writing, everything on this show is just mesmerizing. The Kendall stuff, like I think like there's obviously like big business, big picture that we need to talk about here, which is so much more complicated than my puny little brain can handle. I would not be anywhere in the vicinity of the line of succession for the Roy family. But it's really the Kendall stuff that launches us back into season two and such an immediate, amazing reminder of A, how bad of a situation Kendall has been in, how bad of a situation he's been in, like outside of even just the hit and run, like the drug stuff has really sent him for a clear loop. talk, you know, factor the hit and run into it, factor the big business decision that he had tried to make, the coup against his father that went horribly, horribly wrong, and just this mesmerizing performance by Jeremy Strong when we meet him in the bathtub, where it seems like he has just finally allowed himself a minute of relaxation.
Right. And then you also have to factor in the fact that, like, he has, you know, destroyed a lot of his interpersonal relationships with his family members because of this huge move that he tried to make. So Shiv and Roman are not happy with him. Connor's sort of on the fence because he's, yeah, I don't know, sort of like...
he's busy, like, trying to purchase Napoleon's penis.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, what a ridiculous storyline.
Not pickled in a jar. It's dried.
But like Logan, Logan and Marcy are sort of a soft place to fall. I don't know. Marcia like gives him a little hug and kiss on the cheek, which I thought was kind of interesting and mothering.
She's like maternal towards him. Yeah.
Unusually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if this is Logan's version of being like a good, loving father, then man, that's some tough love that Kendall gets, because he gave Kendall the big hug. He opened his arms. He gave him a bear hug at the end of season one. He sent him off to, you know, clean himself out. You're now at my mercy again, because we know what you've done and you cannot go through with this deal with Sandy and Stewie. You're not going to buy me out. You're going to back off of that. Kendall does as he's told. He goes to rehab. He thinks he's actually going to have some time to, like, you know, like, kind of like get out of the clear trauma of what has just happened to him, what he has just done to his own life. He's blown his existence up.
And then he's thrust directly back into
Right back in. So he's in Iceland, is what you deduced. Emily, you called it like immediately. You looked at it like, that's Iceland. You've done some research. It's Iceland and Croatia where these scenes were shot.
It's showing up as both, but I think it's Iceland.
Okay.
From what I can understand. I mean, you and I were there a couple years ago and it was covered in snow. This looks like it was a little bit more of a temperate climate.
It's like June-ish, maybe, I think. So maybe it is the summer.
No, it's not, because there's no foliage on the leaves.
There's no foliage on the leaves. Okay, so that's the tell. Never mind. I have no idea
what season
it is.
Pay attention to the nature.
I'm trying to pay attention to so many things here that I'm bound to get some of this wrong.
They're at a summer estate during the winter.
The summer palace in the winter time.
That's supposed to give us some sort of, like, I don't know, sad, wintry weirdness.
I mean, I guess I should, you know, they're wearing very, very, very heavy, warm clothes while they're at the Summer Palace. So that should be a tell. But the whole opening sequence is really rooted in Kendall's perspective. Jeremy Strong, this was something that I didn't mention in our preview podcast, I don't think, but I know it was something that I wanted to talk about. I love the way that the camera captures him. Like, there's always like these shots of him like riding an escalator and he's like unmoving, or when he's moving, the camera is right behind him, and it's framed in a way where, like, the way that he's shot, maybe it's even the way that he's dressed, it's sort of the like the despondent look on his face, sometimes like a blank look on his face. He often in season one really did look like this child who is bracing himself to stand up against his father, or bracing himself to emerge from beneath the shadow of his father. And in this first episode, in this first sequence where he's removed from the tub, he is going very meekly to meet this man who tells him, you're needed. He's being escorted. He's being driven to the local station where he's going to film a via satellite segment that he's very unprepared for. I saw Dad's plan, and Dad's plan was better. The company line that he's going to repeat throughout the episode. There's just this look of trauma on his face of like, I'm in huge trouble and the only one who can save me is Daddy. And it's just such a shift, but it's also very consistent with, I feel like, the way that the show has framed Jeremy Strong as Kendall. It's just so good. It's so good.
And he really does look terrible. I mean, he has huge dark circles. He looks kind of gaunt and sad. I think anyone would look that bad in this scenario. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So
I'd have a long way to go before I looked that gaunt, but I think that I would look that like ghastly.
And everyone's noticing it too. Shiv and Roman are both like, what happened to you? What's going on? Even Tom is like, oh, he looks like a candle or something, like an unshaved candle.
Well, it's intense because we know what's happened with Kendall.
No one else does.
Nobody else does except for Logan and Marcia and Colin, the security guard.
I guess Marcia's son kind of knows.
Who's does Marsha's son know? Is that,
wasn't he in the library with her, and then they both left, and Logan was like, here's
I don't identify Marsha's son as enough of a character to remember that detail. I'd have to go back.
Well,
and look.
I remember it.
Fair
so
enough.
Maybe keep that in your back pocket, everyone.
Okay, well that character could still emerge, I suppose. But it's a very tight circle. It's a very tight circle of people who know about Kendall. Certainly, his siblings don't. Their last impression of Kendall is the confrontation they had with Kendall at Shiv's wedding, where it came out that he was going to be making the move that he was going to be making, and everyone was pissed. It was huge WTF mode with all the kids towards Kendall, and rightfully so from their perspective. It's a betrayal. It's, you know, the defeat of everything they know. Not that everything they know is especially good or beneficial towards the greater humankind, but in their little world, in their very big little world.
Well, it's a breach of loyalty within the family, and I think that is one of the greater sins that can be committed amongst
each other.
They
call it treason.
Yeah.
And like Kendall in that moment back in season one in the finale was like trying to be like, it's not treason to go against dad for like strong reasons. Like, that's not what this is. Like, you're all warped. You're all brainwashed. And now it's Kendall who's the zombie who's just parroting out whatever Logan needs him to say. But his siblings have no sympathy for him. They just see him still as the enemy who's had like a sudden about face, that there must either be like some blackmail dad has on Kendall or some backroom deal that Kendall and Logan have struck. That narrative is probably reinforced by the fact that by the end of the episode, Logan has named Kendall and Roman co-COOs of Waystar Royco. So the fact that that has happened, even though we know what Kendall is going through and we see it in painful, excruciating detail, it's a very, very tight net of people who do know. So, of course, his siblings are going to be absolutely awful to him. I wrote down some of what they said in their first confrontation with Kendall.
Yeah, let's rehash that.
Yeah, all right. Foul language is about to ensue. Filthy NSFW language is about to take place. So if you are in the presence of young children, probably don't listen to the Succession podcast.
Or if you're listening to this aloud at work.
Yes, yes.
This is not safe for work. Put on your headphones.
Put on headphones or skip ahead 30 seconds to a minute. Here we go. Roman says about Kendall, he's like a sex robot for dad to fuck.
Oh.
Shiv says he's like an old beaten dog. Roman says he's both of those things and also a piece of shit. Shiv says, no, he's a pathetic little fucking narcissist who repeatedly puts his own self-interest above everything else and then tries to justify it with half-assed appeals to the rigors of the fucking market. And then Roman punctuates the point by saying, you're a fucking prick. So that's the treatment. That's the treatment that Kendall is getting right now, as he is being just like, as his father says at one point, like, get up on the rack, we're gonna stretch you out limb from limb, William Wallace style, and like that's the same treatment that he's getting from his siblings, who on their best day are pretty awful. So here for Kendall's worst day, one of his worst days, he's in his worst days. Their normal levels of interaction are just especially more painful, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's and they're also kind of questioning why he's not fighting back either, because I think that everyone has a pretty good rapport with one another when it comes to feeling challenged or threatened.
Yeah,
they're very fast to take jabs at one another. And the fact that Kendall's not saying anything.
Yeah, I think
makes it sort of suspicious.
A
right.
Big deal. I mean, I don't think that they could guess at what had happened.
Definitely not. But they're also like, that's kind of unlike him. Usually he's, you know, sort of witty enough to come back at us, or, you know, sort of measured in a way that he doesn't seem to be at this moment in time.
I think that they could pull it together eventually, but they're, you know, one of the things that we're dealing with on Succession is, you know, it's the viper's nest, as they talk about, but like really like every single one of them is a viper. You know, they're all narcissists. They're all self-concerned with their own ascension to power, that you wonder who is actually going to pay enough attention to Kendall to figure out, or to want to figure out, what's actually going on with him. And if they figure it out, what level of sympathy are they going to have for this guy? Like Roman and Kendall's storylines, you imagine, are going to be fairly closely linked in the near term, as they're both co-COOs. So is Roman going to be preoccupied with understanding why his brother is, you know, in this very dark way? Or is he just going to be so mad at his brother still that he's not even going to care? I think if history, you know, if past is prologue, like, I feel like that dictates to us that Roman probably isn't going to give much of a crap.
I mean, everyone's also wrapped up in their own dramas, right? Like,
exactly.
We see Roman at a press conference to discuss the satellite that exploded, right? And, you know, they're
not to be facetious, but I'm not a rocket scientist.
Yeah, which is such a brutally
awful,
incredible lie that he throws out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're trying to investigate. They're taking questions from the press. There's a lot of discussion on how serious this investigation is going to be. They want to figure out the timeline, like why this was pushed up so quickly. And Roman's kind of sitting there cowering and, you know, trying to give his best two cents in on something that was basically his fault.
Yeah. Well, Roman's trying to be more of a serious person.
How's he doing?
You know, it comes and it goes. I think that's fascinating, though, because like that, there was a great line about that in the first season. I think it's the second episode of the first season where Kendall's trying to like articulate why he's the right person to succeed. And Roman and Shiv are still like pushing for themselves. And Kendall says to Roman, like, you're a good guy, but you're not a serious person. I think Roman is really trying to be a serious person. He sees right now, given the severity of everything, that if he is ever going to be named the successor, like the time is now for him to go from like little princeling to like actual lord of this, you know, kingdom, to the top of the mountain, you know, to like really do well in the dentist appointment with Zeus, as they talk about Logan at one point.
But Logan doesn't seem to really be picking up what he's putting down in terms of advice, right?
No, I think that the game that that Roman is describing to Logan, and when he's brought behind closed doors, is like he wants to sell off everything and basically play the stock market, which is not like the spirit of
anything Logan Roy.
You know, well, Logan Roy is like, you know, like a shoot everything that moves kind of guy. Like, you know, Waystar Royco has its hands in so much. Shiv talks about this in her meeting with Logan about how, you know, we're in indie film, we're in video games, we're in theme parks, we're in way too much. And that's sort of Logan's thing. He wants it all. He wants the world. Roman wants money. You know, for Logan, I think if it was just about money and if it was just about the well-being of his family, he would have sold. And I think that was the direction that he was maybe leaning for a minute in this episode. But as we talked about in the preview show, and as it came from Sarah Snook, who plays Shiv, that the favorite child of Logan Roy is his company. To give that away so easily, to give it up without a fight, even if it's the wrong thing to do, that's the child he's going to fight for the most. And what Roman is pitching is just not something he's that interested in.
A $10 billion payout sounds good, though.
Yeah, let me get a slice of that pizza pie. Toss that onto the table with all the other pizzas.
I mean, but also it's the kind of thing, like, what would he even occupy his time with if he didn't have this company to run any longer, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that you hear that a lot, like, from people who are in very powerful positions that are, like, all-consuming jobs that become identity, you know, that are, you know, close to the age of retirement and they don't really need to be working anymore. It's not like I'm speaking from the experience of my father, who I love dearly, but is, you know, he's been at his same job, probably doesn't need to be there anymore. But he's very into his work. And he has said to me that, like, he's very concerned about what happens to his brain if he decides to stop working. I imagine that it's a similar deal with somebody like Logan Roy, whose entire existence is baked into the idea that he built this thing from the ground up. This is a monument to his achievements in life, and he doesn't want to see it fade away. He doesn't want to see it crumble. But he is like that parent who is, you know, nearing the age of not being able to be trusted to completely live on their own isolation, and they need to start factoring their children into their own retirement plans, into their own plans of, like, well, how am I going to begin the process of leaving this planet? You know, and are just, like, refusing to have that conversation, are refusing to, like, actively, like, make preparations for what the future looks like without them. And it maybe he's actually starting to do that with Shiv, who he, you know, he locks in as the person that he's going to name as his successor. They have a really, on the face of it, tender moment talking about that.
Yeah.
But how real is it versus this is just like a stopgap for now, and he's still not really thinking about the future of his children. If he was thinking about the future of his children, he would have sold the company and gone for the $10 billion payout.
You think so?
Yeah, that's the advice from everybody. Like, sell.
Yeah. I also feel bad for Shiv that she has to keep reiterating, this is for real, right? Like, we're not joking here. This is real.
Yeah.
And that almost makes me even more nervous that he's going to turn on her. Where he'll be like, oh yeah, I lined it up for you. And then, you know, some other thing comes up that makes it more appealing for him personally. And he's going to, you know, sort of pull that away from Shiv.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because Shiv being the successor, it makes so much sense for a lot of reasons. She's one of the smartest characters on the show. She's arguably the smartest of the siblings. It's between her and Kendall, and I think Kendall has proven that so many things are allowed to get in his own way, or he has blind spots. He dudes the wrong people. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't interact with people the right way.
And the substance abuse doesn't help either.
Shiv is clearly the front runner to win Survivor of the four Roy siblings. It's not even.
I love how we haven't even really talked about Connor at all.
Well, Connor, we talked about really the only thing to talk about with Connor.
Yeah, true.
But Shiv is, you know, Shiv is the one who I would bet on to win every single time because she's smart, she's personable, she understands people's, like, you know, turnkey situations, and because of that, I'm inclined to think that if Logan is planning some kind of double cross, if he's like using Shiv as a means to an end right now, then Shiv would see it coming. But I think something that I didn't see coming was how emotional Shiv was going to be when Logan starts saying, like, this is for real. If you want this, it's yours. And then, like, you see that, like, crack in the facade. Like, she allows herself a moment of being really touched by it.
Like,
this is something I always wanted but never thought was possible for me. You know,
I think she operates with, you know, a pretty significant chip on her shoulder and is very transactional in how she handles her business life and her personal life. So the fact that she can be let in and sort of feel this moment for a second is really touching, but also just makes me so nervous for her. Even though I feel like I'm not supposed to feel that bad because, I don't know, she cheats on her husband, but he's also sort of a dope, so I don't really know how to feel about it.
All of them are terrible to some degree, except for cousin Greg, who's an angel. but for Shiv, I think it's that that moment that we're allowed to see, like, sort of like daybreak in her very strong, emotionally, you know, clear facade, that we're allowed to have, like, an actual tender moment between her and her father. And you hear that a lot, that, like, she and Logan, like, she's Logan's favorite kid and everyone's like, oh, you're daddy's girl. And season one really tested that because she went to work for Gil Evis, who is a huge political rival for Logan and a political obstacle. And she smoothed that over. She really proved her value. And that was during her wedding.
Right.
So I think
now this happens during her honeymoon.
Right. Exactly. She doesn't seem to really care.
Yeah, no.
But I think it's interesting because I think that the road is paved for Shiv to have a blind spot here if there is something amiss, if Logan does have this additional, you know, like, secret plan. Like, if he's just like a misogynistic asshole who needs, like, to spruce Kendall back up so that Kendall can be the successor because he wants it to be like a male heir, if he's that kind of guy, there's no reason to think that that's not the case. Logan's a pretty bad dude. That could absolutely be it. But in reality, if he does need to start setting, you know, if he is actually considering what is the future of this company beyond me, if he cares about that, and I'm not convinced that he does, but if he cares about that, then Shiv really is a great choice. And so he really shouldn't be double dealing behind her back. And this really should be on the level. Either way, he says to her, like, this is the moment, right? Remember this moment. So we should remember that moment.
Something smells amiss.
Yes.
In this house.
Yes. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, everyone shows up. It smells bad.
It smells funky.
And they finally sort of track down the stench, and it's coming from a chimney, which would have been one of the first places I looked if I were the person running the household. And there's so much staff, right? There's so many people running around preparing things. Looked like it was all closed up for the winter. And then they're pulling off all of the, you know, different cloths that are protecting the furniture. They're setting up really elaborate meals for everyone to show up. But this smell is just emanating and no one can quite figure it out, right? And then they pull it down from the chimney and it's a bunch of raccoons that were trapped up there.
30 to 50 feral raccoons.
No, not that many. No. I was like, are you reading that from something?
Emily, I think you were off the internet last week. But okay. That's okay.
Sorry.
Was it multiple raccoons?
Yeah, probably a little family.
I saw like one face. I didn't realize it was a cluster, a murder of raccoons. I don't know if that's the correct term. A chimney of raccoons is how you identify a
pack. Let me tell you, that is not the first place where that's happened before. There are a lot of issues with raccoons and chimneys. That's why you get a chimney cover.
I mean,
which I'm surprised the Roys didn't have.
This is one of those great examples of Succession where it's both like very funny and very depressing at the same time.
The food waste. Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, Emily, as a food studies master.
Yes.
This must have really bothered you to see the Roys throw out all of those steaks and lobsters that really had probably no spoil or rot to them, were perfectly fine and totally edible, and straight into the garbage they go because Logan has a fit when he identifies rotting meat in his household. He just wants pizza. He wants to carbo load instead.
It's a kind of a strange choice. I sort of tried to glaze over this by pretending that a lot of the staff also ate some before they threw everything out.
You did see them throwing it into the trash can, though.
Which is pretty upsetting.
I mean, maybe those were empty trash bags and they just plan on like Santa Claus, like getting like the trash bag out of the bin and just like throwing it over their shoulders and bringing that stuff home.
If cousin Greg had been there, he might have taken a dog bag and put some of the food in that, the poop bag.
Well, they don't pre-poop the garbage bags either, so perhaps he would be they do sometimes pre-scent the garbage bag. One time people tried to marinate chicken thighs in a lavender scented garbage bag at an occasion that I was at, and that was a terrible choice. Very bad choice.
I wasn't there. I would have stopped it.
Poison.
I would have stopped it.
I didn't eat the chicken, and the people who did said something tastes wrong.
Like a cleaning scent.
Tastes wrong. So as long as they weren't like scented garbage bags, they were just like straight up plastic bags.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have brought all that stuff home.
But anyway, we're seeing like really
gross example of their wealth.
We're seeing really awful examples of their wealth and also how they treat people, right? Because Logan immediately decides to blame the contractor who's arguably done about $300,000 of renovations on the house. And he says, you know, you did this to me on purpose. This is like a legacy thing that you're trying to like, you know, throw a bag of raccoons into my chimney and like, I'll pay you like $100,000 for your work and that's it.
And the guy is like, it was a $300,000 job.
Yeah.
That's not enough money.
Yeah. So we're seeing the Logan sort of display really abysmal behavior around people that work for them. And I feel bad for Jerry too. Should we talk about what happened to Jerry?
We'll get to Jerry, but I think to stay on this point, like $100,000 for Logan Roy is like
nothing.
A dime.
Yeah.
You know, it's like giving somebody some change. And to just give this guy what he wants, $300,000 for the job that he is owed this money, this contractor who he is blaming for being spiteful and you know, stuffing the chimney with raccoons. I didn't get the sense that was actually what happened. I got the sense that this was more of Logan Roy's classic paranoia and his vindictiveness. It shows the lengths of the vindictiveness of Logan Roy. And as we know that we're prepping for a really ugly battle between him and Sandy because he's going to fight the bear hug. You know, this was a great sort of like smaller way of representing just the, you know, I won't let you beat me.
Right.
I will bleed you. I'll bleed you dry. I'll let you die. And to have that small example here of like what's to come clearly in the future of the show was good, but it was also great as a reminder of just like the reckless evil that is inflicted upon the world by folks like these, by people like by the Logan Roys of the world, by the Roy families of the world.
Definitely.
So I loved that. It made me horribly sad. It was also rendered in a very comical way at times. It was pretty funny, but it was, you know, really leaning hard on that tragicomedy.
Yeah.
Emily Fox.
Yeah, that dramedy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so let's we have this line of succession. There's the big lunch meeting with all the pizzas at the table,
which no one seems to be eating either.
And Logan and Logan's trying to get everybody to talk about it, and Shiv I think is the one who says, "Dad, you kind of have this thing where like when you try to foster a debate, you sort of freeze the conversation just by the sheer fact of your presence," which leads us to all these closed door meetings, and it seems like like Roman really biffs it in his meeting. Shiv does really well in hers. She gets the nod for the line of succession.
And then we don't see any other meetings, right?
There are no other meetings that we see, at least. We get from the Shiv meeting that even though that deal seems like it's, you know, it's not in paper, it's not locked in yet between Logan and Shiv, that either way, Shiv doesn't want that to be public yet. Like, they need to do this very delicately. They need to do it behind closed doors, to the point that when Logan comes back out and he's catching everybody up and says, like, I'm going to fight the thing, he says, it doesn't really matter who I name as successor right now. It could be Jerry for all we care, because it's just a name. And Jerry's like, oh, well, thank you very much. Because Logan's like, in fact, it will be Jerry. Jerry's like, oh, that's great. And then Logan's like, it won't actually be you, Jerry. We're just saying you right now as a thing. And Jerry's like, oh, all right.
I see that Jerry actually is going to be a season regular now. Is that
a series regular?
Yeah, a series regular.
I hope that's the case.
So that's good to hear.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, it's another one of those sort of power moves where he can say something and then immediately pull it out from underneath you, right?
Yeah.
So that's upsetting.
Shiv doesn't even tell Tom. Like, that's how top secret this is going to be.
Also, though, Tom is like totally up her butt about like figuring out his next move, right?
Yeah, of course. But like at the same point, they're married, and like you would think that like this is the kind of thing that maybe like you inform your spouse. Emily, if I was in line to be the king of a major media conglomerate that I was sworn not to tell anybody about, I'd still tell you.
Thank you.
You know, I'd like to think I'd tell you too. You'd like to think so, or
no,
you
would?
You would. I hope that you would.
Well, I can't see it being something where I'd be threatened that you would make some sort of power play. And I think maybe that's where Shiv's operating from, because they've always had to fight like that, even with her siblings. So even to, you know, bring this kind of information into her relationship probably feels dangerous for her, because she's never had a safe relationship with probably anyone.
She also probably doesn't actually love Tom.
Yeah, I mean, there is that too.
So it's not like surprising. It's just notable, because that's drama that's bubbling beneath the surface that'll eventually come out.
She'll probably figure out how to make him more expendable.
Well, she got him a new job. He's going to be the chair of global broadcast news. He's going to be in charge of ATN. We've seen a little bit of ATN on the show already. And this is like a stepping stone for him to get higher and higher in the company. She says, you got to eat the peach, baby. And Tom seems really happy about this. So for now, he's content. And I'm hopeful that Tom will drag cousin Greg into global broadcast news as well. No Tom and Greg in this episode of Succession.
But one can hope for future interactions.
One can hope for future interactions. In fact, only a brief amount of cousin Greg in this episode.
But you know what? That's okay, because I think we needed to hit the ground running, kind of seeing the strategic moves of a lot of these people, and then we can pepper it with Greg. He's like the seasoning.
He is. He's the Cajun spice on that Cajun chicken linguine from California Pizza Kitchen.
Oh my
God. They make it just right. Or if you want to call him a different seasoning, he's the Park Coke of the Roy family, because Kendall's normal drug connect is not accessible. Jessica, his assistant, is not available. So he has to lean on cousin Greg to score some Coke. And Greg has like, I've got a really great source. Mike Connect, he's got the good stuff. And it's just cocaine that he bought in a dime bag from some guy in the park. And Kendall, who is the wealthiest of wealthy princes, is like, I have to do park coke. This is what I have to do. And he says,
How the mighty have fallen.
Indeed, that this is what he's reduced to. And he is
in his brand new apartment, by the way.
Yeah, which he sold his old place because it reminded him too much of his wife and his family.
I feel like that happened pretty quickly for 48 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I mean, who knows if that had been something that was already happening in the works. And it was just like not important enough to show to us. But yeah, Kendall's forced to do park coke. It's the worst coke he's ever done. Greg offers to return the coke and get his money back. Kendall's like, yeah, you go do that.
Yeah.
Go find that guy and present your receipt.
Yeah.
So that's it for cousin Greg. And I think you're right. I think that there was a lot of business to attend to here. And all of these characters now are so well established. And they're all so great and funny in their own right and terrible in their own right that they're all going to be magnetic. That as much as I love cousin Greg, I think we can save him for deeper in the season. Hopefully not too long before we can get into some of this
stuff. Definitely. He has his time and place.
What did you think of Kendall finding out about the details of the accident and how the cleanup effort is going? And we get a name for the deceased, Andrew Dodd, who the official records, Emily, will say that it was death by misadventure.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a thing. Is that a thing?
Maybe. It's England, so probably.
Is that right? Is that how it works?
Doesn't that sound so much more charming? That's usually what happens
death
with anything
by
British.
No, I thought that, I mean, that's something that like I would imagine for Doctor Who. But I guess it is a thing. Death by misadventure in the United Kingdom, a death by misadventure as recorded by coroners and on death certificates and associated documents is one that is primarily attributed to an accident that occurred due to a risk that was taken voluntarily.
Death by misadventure.
Death by misadventure is what it's officially going to be, but we know, unofficially the actual story. And Kendall is getting the download from Colin, head of security, or at least the man who is
manslaughter by misadventure.
We find out that he was alive.
Yeah,
that he was alive long enough to unbuckle himself in the car,
which is good news for Kendall because it could implicate that he was driving rather than Kendall driving.
Right. But it's like horrible news.
Yeah.
To know that he didn't die on impact.
Right. He probably struggled for a bit to try to get out. Kendall was able to get out. And we did see Kendall fight to go back down and see if he could get him. But
the once I'm not really here to give him much of a pass.
Oh, no, for sure.
You know,
but it's probably pretty brutal to hear the details and to know exactly what happened and then to just shake it off and walk on with your day, which is what Kendall's been trying to do. So, I mean, the debrief on all of that is what it is. It probably leaves everybody sitting with a bit of a pit in their stomach. I certainly felt a little icky about it. How about you?
Yeah, I felt very icky about it.
Yeah.
I just felt bad. I felt terrible about it. But I mean, like, it sounds like
they've got it under control
for now. But I mean, like, the level of intensity about Kendall right now and like the clear like survivor's guilt that he is probably going through and the just the way that he his entire existence right now is being manhandled by his father, that for Kendall, maybe the way to reclaim some power eventually is to take ownership over what happened.
Interesting.
And I wonder, just because, like, so the first time we ever met Kendall, he was like on his way towards becoming the man. And the last time we saw Kendall at the end of season one was him at the mercy of the man he was trying to step out from. Right.
Right.
Like, that was the arc for Kendall. It was a real fall from grace for him. And for Logan, who starts the series on top of the mountain, but looks like he is going to fall off of the mountain, both because he's like, he's peeing where he shouldn't be peeing in the very
so many different times and places
in his very first appearance of the series. But also the stroke by the end of the first episode and his health scares throughout the first season. The fact that he ends delivering his own bear hug of sorts was quite the arc on his own. So entering season two, Logan is looking as strong as ever. He's got like the baby blue sweater. He's talking in like full blown Chief O'Hagan voice. like, you know, come on, Mr. Potato Head. You know, just like lots of great stuff like that. And he seems as strong as ever, even though his political enemies, his business rivals, know some things about him that he would rather them not know, because Kendall gave up the goods on like the prescriptions he's taking, a lot of like the medical stuff that's going on with him. But he's prepared for a fight, and Kendall is just like a zombie. He's a ghost. I expect there to be some sort of reversal of that across,
where he's going to build himself back up.
Well, but what that looks like is the question.
Right, of course.
I think that there will be some sense of Kendall stepping out and doing something for himself in like a purer way than we've gotten in the past. And I think that the purest version of that would be for him to take responsibility over what happened to his name was Andrew Dodd.
Yeah. I do think, though, that the last shot of the episode where he's sent in to kind of see Stewie and Sandy, right?
Yeah.
And Logan's supposed to be going in with him, and they goes, oh, no, like, hold on, just let him know I'm taking a phone call.
Yeah.
He's left to his own devices, basically, to face the two men that he almost betrayed his father with. How do you feel about that? Because that almost feels like another low for him.
Well, it's another power move by Logan. Logan,
sure.
Logan now believes that he has Kendall completely in his pocket. has to show him like the barest amounts of affection, you know, their first interactions. We haven't even said like the real punchline of the opening, you know, pre-credits act, which was such a sprawling act. But after Kendall with like his recently bloodied nose goes on TV and like really stumbles his way through the beginning of it, but even like in his shell-shocked way, at least toes the company line over the course of the appearance.
Yeah.
And says like, if my father were to be hit by a bus, we would need the buses to be replenished by one because you'd be down a bus. And you get the perspective of Logan with, you know, the rest of the people back in New York watching the broadcast. And Logan says, ladies and gentlemen, the first fucking thing my son has ever done right. And that is his attitude towards his son right now, towards his number one boy. And when they meet face to face after this very turbulent 48-hour reprieve, and that was it that Kendall is afforded because he's needed back in the fight, Logan brings him in and just like doesn't show him any affection for what has happened at all. There's no artifice of that. It's not until they get to the Summer Palace where like they even remotely try to have like a father-son conversation about it, and even then it's really, really awkward, and it's Marcy who steps up. So I think that Logan is taking extreme advantage of Kendall because he feels like he can. Like, he doesn't have any reason to think that he doesn't, you know, have Kendall completely in his pocket. I think that you got to imagine that like is it a little repetitive to go back to that well of like Kendall betraying his father again? Maybe. But I think it all depends on presentation, and it depends on, you know, like if Kendall is doing that as a power grab or if Kendall is doing it for Kendall, that would be different to me. Mm-hmm. So I think it's something to keep in mind. That Kendall to Sandy scene was great.
Yeah.
I wrote down that final line of where Kendall's yes. like, what is dad? What is my father wants to know what you guys actually want out of this. And Stewie is like, well, as you know, we're kind of hoping for the whole thing. And then Kendall goes, yeah, so he wanted me to tell you to say, yeah, obviously our public line will be that we're considering the offer, but it doesn't matter what you offer. He will never recommend this to the board. You're going to bleed cash. He's going to bleed cash. It will never end. And maybe you'll kill him. But if you don't, he aims to kill you. He will go bankrupt or he'll go to jail before he lets you beat him. He will kill you in the business. And if that doesn't work, he will send people around. He will send men to kill your pets and fuck your wives, and it will never be over. So that's the message. I love how that is. So that's the message. And then Sandy closes at the episode with the great line, good, well, let's move ahead with that process, shall we?
Yeah, so brutal.
This show is just so sharply written.
Yeah.
The dialogue, the barbs. I mean, like, this is not a show where people are killing each other with swords and dragons and
just
bullets.
Just words
and
money.
And deeds and money. And the way that it plays out is just spectacular.
Do you think he sat down and had like a steak afterwards? Or he was already sitting, Sandy?
Oh, Sandy?
Yeah,
probably. Sandy can eat whatever he wants. Kendall doesn't look like he's eating much right now. Not even the pizza.
Just snorting things.
How about some feedback, Emily?
Yeah,
let's start closing out with some feedback. As we said, we want more feedback from you guys. We've got good feedback this week. Great feedback, even. We would like to open it up to even more feedback in the weeks moving forward. So please send it our way at Post Show Recaps. I'm at Rand Howard. Emily is at Emilet. These first few questions come from the great, fantastic Fitzy Brendan. Fitzy Brendan launches us into this with, what's the best vehicle for picking someone up from the private jet at the airport? We see that Kendall is going to be picked up by motorcycle.
Yeah, he's like, is the bike here?
Would you like to be picked up by motorcycle at some point
if
in the future
the
of your life?
If I took the BQE back like he does in the show, I would not want to be taking a motorcycle. Thank you very much.
BQE is a little too dangerous. The Brooklyn Queens Expressway for the motorcycle.
Yeah. No, thank you.
That was a cool shot to see. We drive past that every once in a while, that view of Manhattan from
the BQE. I'm actually surprised he didn't take a helicopter back to Manhattan.
Well, I think that is the best vehicle, Brendan, is the helicopter. But I think...
Yeah, where they have a helipad that you can land on in the city.
For his number one boy.
It looks like he's not number one if he had to take a motorcycle back.
Yeah.
Just saying.
He looks like number two at the very least. Brendan adds, what's the most expensive pizza in New York and what does it taste like? What is the pizza that the Roy family was eating? I wonder if they're out on Long Island. I was trying to think of what Long Island pizzas maybe were in the mix there, but there's really nothing like massively fancy enough. Like maybe like the Umberto Grandma's pizza is an iconic Long Island pizza. Shout out to Little Vincent's in Huntington with the cold cheese, but I don't think that the Roys are going to be going, I don't think that they're lowbrow enough, like lowbrow, what is it? Lowbrow tasteful? What is the matrix?
Lowbrow brilliant?
Lowbrow brilliant, yes. Lowbrow brilliant, and that would be Little Vincent's with cold cheese. I don't think that they're going for that. The most expensive pizza in New York, do you know what it is, Emily?
No, Josh. Do you?
It's a gold.
I have a feeling you do.
It's a gold leaf pizza at Industry Kitchen, $2,000.
Oh, wow.
I imagine.
Did you look up pictures to see if it was the same thing?
I'd seen it on some TV shows before.
Unsurprising.
It's like an Instagram thing for like influencers and stuff. But I don't know who the hell in their right mind is actually shelling out $2,000 for gold leaf pizza that probably tastes like trash. Get out of here with your gold
drag
leaf
them.
Pizza. Forget you, Industry Kitchen. Screw you. Goodbye.
All right. If you were Logan Roy, what pizza would you have brought to the table?
From New York, if you could get it via helicopter and you could keep it warm the whole way. Right now, I'm really into Scar's Pizza.
Yeah.
Matt, if you're listening, that's where we got pizza not terribly long ago. there's a lot of great pizzas that I would get from, but I don't know what the Roys were eating.
Okay.
I was surprised to see them eating pizza at all.
They
thought
weren't,
it was very
actually.
Far beneath
it was
them.
Just laid out on the table.
Then there were also like only like four pies on the table. I was like, that's a pretty sparse amount of food for these people.
Well, it was last minute,
I guess. Brendan also says somebody is totally going to go off the boardwalk in the Hamptons before the end of the season, right? I would say no. I would say no. I bet I would not be surprised if we never go back to the Summer Palace. I think the Summer Palace, I think the way that Succession tends to move goes from like spot to spot to spot to spot to spot. Like there's a few central locations. There's, you know, there's the offices in New York is a central location.
Logan's townhouse or apartment. Yeah. And then other people's apartments too. It is interesting though, just to give you the scope and idea of how much real estate everybody owns.
Yeah. I think that was what, we were trying to accomplish here.
Exactly.
I think like to go from like the big castle wedding, and even though like a year of real time has passed from season one to season two, only 48 hours have passed in the context of the show. And if you're discovering Succession at some point in the future, or even now via binge, then like your immediate experience with Succession is to have spent two episodes in this sprawling castle in the UK, and then going to this sprawling castle essentially on Long Island, New York. It really does just drive home the enormous sense of wealth.
Totally.
Antonio. I love Antonio, who has been texting with me about Succession, has lots of great observations. One in particular that we'll pull up should it become relevant.
Okay.
And Antonio, I would love to have Antonio on the podcast at some point in the not too distant future. Whenever you want it, Antonio, you just let me know. Antonio wrote in and said, considering the double secret plan with and for Shiv, should we be on Logan Death Watch even more now? It seems like the kind of thing that should be in writing ASAP before he goes the way of the chimney raccoon, RIP. How concerned are you for Logan Roy and his longevity here on Succession? Do you think we could lose Brian Cox from the series this season?
This season, probably not. I wonder if it would be next season.
Hard to imagine this show without him. But then again, like the failing health of the character.
I don't know. It kind of feels like an Empire move. You know what I mean?
Like the TV series Empire with Terrence Howard?
Yeah.
Are you a big fan of that?
I mean, I watched like the first like five or six episodes, but they were like, he has a terminal illness. What's he going to do?
And clearly Terrence Howard is still on the show.
Right, yeah. And like, so I feel like maybe the health scare that happened in season one could bubble it back up again, but I feel like that's almost too easy.
Yeah, well, Antonio follows it up by saying the offhanded, it can be Jerry as the successor since it doesn't matter, is surely going to end up mattering at some point. So if there is like another health crisis with Logan and they've just put Jerry's name on there on paper, then Jerry does end up as the heir to the Empire, which would be incredibly great.
And that means she let another man die.
right. Dave Baker chimes in. Thoughts on the new opening credit visuals? There's a slightly different sequence. Same theme song, thankfully. I would be very upset to lose that or even to massively modify it.
Yeah.
Looking at you, Big Little Lies. But the opening credits is mostly the same, except there's a renewed focus on Shiv as a child.
Yes.
Seems to indicate that this is the season of Shiv, which I am here for.
I
SOS.
I am here for it too. God, her hair looks so good.
Save our Shiv.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm down with that if that's the case.
Same.
Dave Baker also asks us, what's the best Roman Roy line of the episode?
The rocket scientist?
The rocket scientist one is easy. I'm going to misquote it. I don't have the exact quote. But he says something about how in the newscast, Kendall looks like a guy who is walking through the slums holding his penis in his hands and wondering if he can trade it for soup. He says something like that. It's like, it's so vivid. But it's just, it's a great articulation of everything about Roman Roy and the way that he sees the world. Mm-hmm. Dave Baker also asks, by the time Succession ends, Cousin Greg is going to be in charge of the family business, right?
Oh God, I hope not.
Park Coke for everybody. But we're talking Coca-Cola. Everybody gets free sodas.
Yeah.
Theme parks are loaded with free sodas.
What if he bought up all of the California pizza kitchens?
That would be great. Yeah. Waystar just goes all the way in on CPK.
Yeah.
A heavy, heavy investment. Gwen SW, to close us out, had said, where is Holly Hunter? Despite being Holly Hunter free, this is great stuff.
Oh, I'm sure she'll show up soon.
I would imagine she will show up soon. Not in the premiere. I think the premiere is really just setting the table for where we are going with pizzas on the table for the remainder of season two. That's it for feedback. I don't think we can wrap up here without at least acknowledging the fact. Emily, what did you think of the scene between Logan Roy and his banker, new character, the financial advisor? Did you like that?
I mean, it just shows how Logan is willing to wine and dine anyone for more information, to pay people off, etc. He's kind of like, what does it take for you to be giving me more intel and to be stopping Sandy from doing what he's doing, right?
Yeah. And Emily, I know that you're already a huge, massive fan of the live action X-Men film franchise. So this clearly didn't go over your head. But for anybody whose head it did go over, Brian Cox is the bad guy in X2, X-Men United, playing William Stryker, the man who is responsible for the Wolverinization of, get ready for it, Logan, played by Hugh Jackman. So already a connection to Logan Roy. In X-Men Origins Wolverine, the declarative worst X-Men movie ever, and in the conversation for worst superhero film of all time, Danny Houston, who plays the banker, who's a terrific actor in so many things, was the bad guy in Wonder Woman, at least for most of it, who plays the bank advisor here, played a younger version of William Stryker, who is the man responsible for the Wolverinization of Logan. So Danny Houston as young William Stryker sitting across the table from Brian Cox, who played old William Stryker. A meeting of the same exact X-Men minds. What do you think about that, Emily? Isn't that great?
So it's like if you got Michael Keaton and Christian Bale and Ben Affleck together.
In a scene together. It's not unlike that. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Or like the two Ron Silvers from Time Cop. What happens if they touch? They meld together and it's very bad.
Help.
Danny Houston's speech to Logan was just so great that I just want to repeat it here. I wrote it down when Logan's like, just tell me your honest take on whether I should sell or fight this. Mm-hmm. And the banker says, you don't want to sell. If you don't want to sell, you don't want to sell. Where's my margin to tell you something you don't want to hear? And Logan tells him that this, consider it a long-term investment in my trust in you. And so he gives him the true. And this is the true. Says, in all honesty, on the business fundamentals, you should make a deal and sell. If you don't, it's going to be a vicious fight that extends for months, years. Perhaps you win. Perhaps. But till then, nothing will get done. It'll soak up all of your resources, all of your attention, beating them away with every regulatory, financial, and political weapon that you have at your disposal. There's blood in the water, and your price is edging down. Tech is coming. Tech is here. Tech has its hands around your throat. There's maybe one, two legacy media operations that will make themselves big enough to survive. The price Sandy's offering is inflated by bitterness, ego, and spite. You choose not to sell. What's going to be different in 2 or 4 years? Are things going to change? Are more people going to read your newspapers, watch TV? Culturally, structurally, and financially, you're in the toilet. In 5 years, you'll be in the mega toilet.
Oh.
The wise thing to do is to sell. Generally, you do the wise thing. Obviously not this time. This time, you'll call me something disgusting and throw the decanter at the wall. And to his credit, Logan does not throw the decanter at the wall, nor does he say anything disgusting about Danny Houston's character. I imagine, why would he? He would be saying something disgusting about a younger version of himself.
Mm.
The mega toilet. I don't want to see the mega toilet,
no,
by the way.
But I think he has a point there, right? Because tech is coming, tech is here, tech has got its hands around your throat. Really does speak to the fact that Logan is a dinosaur in a lot of these things. And, you know, when we talk with, you know, we saw Kendall last season being really concerned about him, you know, willy-nilly buying up all of these local news stations. Kendall's like, no, this company needs to reinvent itself. It needs to be more forward-focused, thinking about the future, thinking about tech. So the banker is not wrong in saying a lot of this stuff, but of course he understands the ego behind all of it. And yeah, Logan's going to hold strong.
All right. Well, we will hold strong with another episode of our Succession Recap podcast here on Post Show Recaps, Post Show Roy Caps, as it has been dubbed by the folks that be on Twitter. Shout out to Fitzy Brendan. Next week's episode, Valter. Which is the name of the website that's run by Rob Yang's character, Lawrence Yee, who really popped in the very early going of Succession season one, but hasn't really made much of an impact since then. The fact that we're getting an episode named after Valter, I would love to see some more of that character becoming important here in season two.
Definitely.
Let's hope so. We're going to be recording that podcast late morning, early afternoon of August 20th. That's going to be the Tuesday after Succession airs. So you have plenty of time to get in your questions. Send them in. Send us your feedback. At Post Show Recaps is our Twitter account. I am at Round Howard. Emily is at Emilet. Please subscribe on your podcast app of choice. Give us your ratings, your reviews. All of that would be greatly appreciated. Elsewhere on Post Show Recaps, I would say watch this space. The morning of 8:15, August 15th, the new podcast series is launching about an old series co-hosted by Mike Bloom and myself. We are very excited about that one. So keep an ear out for it on the morning of 8:15. Emily Fox, what else is up?
Not much.
Living
busy week. Yeah.
Busy week. You got a lot going on?
Yeah, dude. I got to go to work soon.
All right. Well, I will wrap this up so that you may go to work. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back with another episode of Succession very soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. One last thing before we close out today's recap of the Succession season 2 premiere. I want to take a quick second to thank our friends over at TrueCar. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date. The luxury package you got after a big promotion. Or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas.